Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Did you notice, Paul, through the cloud deck, you could see it periodically, the full moon overhead?
I got a good look at it this morning going out of the complex.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually nice to see the moon. And in April, they call it the wolf moon. Well, no, that's January. What am I talking about? April is the pink moon because of the blossoms. Or the fish moon, if you're playing along at home. So, Aaron, the Native Americans would name the moons based on what was going on at the times, right?
I remember you spitting off that random fact maybe a few months ago, and I was like, wow.
Well, at least he's not playing the Pocahontas song.
Oh, I can get
which
it.
Which has the references to the Indian moon in it. Some one of them, I guess.
I love that song, actually.
Oh, here he
actually.
Goes. No.
He's pulling it up.
You asked for it.
From the vault.
Buddy. Yeah. Vanessa Williams.
And I have to admit, Aaron, I do like the song as well.
Right? Yeah, it's got to be one of the best.
It is beautiful.
How about this one?
Blue moon, blue moon, blue moon.
That's a good intro.
Blue moon, moon.
That's
moon.
A Pittsburgh. That, you know, there's always a Pittsburgh connection. So blue moon, at least you get to see a little of the moon. And we missed the really severe weather last night. It went south of the city. just glazed the southwestern part of Pennsylvania, and now we're talking about the possibility of snow showers again. Hopefully that's the last of that. Although we know at times it has snowed into May, believe it or not.
Mm.
Meanwhile, a lot of people just curious, since the governor and his family fortunately were not injured in that arson on early Sunday morning, a lot of people just wanting to know. I mean, this is goes all the way to the White House, and really people have reached out from around the world for Governor Josh Shapiro and his family. So who is Cody Ballmer? KDK TV's Lauren Linder.
We're learning that Cody Ballmer had a past criminal history when he allegedly set the governor's mansion on fire, and he ended up turning himself in this time after an ex called police. Now, the 38-year-old Ballmer is facing charges including attempted homicide, aggravated arson, and terrorism in the incident at the governor's mansion. Police say he filled beer bottles with gas and climbed over a fence before he broke into the mansion and set it on fire with those homemade Molotov cocktails early Sunday morning. They also say he, quote, harbored hatred toward Shapiro and planned to beat him with a hammer if he saw him. It all took place just hours after Shapiro held a Seder with his family for Passover. But police have yet to share a motive.
All his actions were geared towards getting at the governor and causing harm to the governor. And he was methodical, and his actions were well planned out.
Now, Ballmer's mom, Christy, told CBS her son was mentally ill and off his meds. She says she had reached out to four police departments last week to try to get her son picked up, but couldn't get anybody to help. Court records show he previously was charged with simple assault in 2023 after a suicide attempt and hitting his wife and sons and biting her leg. He was supposed to be in court for this case on Wednesday. He also was granted primary custody of two other children months later. Thankfully, no one was hurt in this incident. So far, no word on whether federal charges will be filed. Reporting from the North Shore, Lauren Linter, KDK TV News.
And also reaction even from the BBC following this story. So what happens next? Obviously no bail because they believe he presents a present threat and danger.
Yeah, the judge in this case said that there was no way that conditions could be drawn up that would ensure the community's safety.
Well, I think we're grateful for that based on the fact that what you just heard, and President Trump reacted from the White House.
The attacker was not a fan of Trump, I understand, just from what I read and from what I've been told. The attacker basically wasn't a fan of anybody. It's probably just a whack job. And certainly a thing like that cannot be allowed to happen.
And we'll continue to bring you the latest, but this has also opened up the conversation about, was this a hate crime against the fact that the governor and his family are Jewish?
And we have to nail down the motive now.
Right, because they, you know, that's part of, they have to have a motive, you know, when you have an attempted homicide. So, and that hammer he talked about, the details of that was a, like a small sledgehammer, right?
Yeah. And he said if he had encountered the governor, he would have beat him with it.
Now, he offered that up.
Right.
Which
also saying he had a hatred of the governor. Apparently, there were a number of posts on his Facebook account in which he was very unhappy with Joe Biden.
Yeah, he didn't, as Trump said, he didn't like anybody. So I didn't see the part where he wasn't a Trump fan.
Doesn't this make you think about how Trump is talking about pushing mental care with trying to solve the homeless issue? Not that he was homeless, but there's so many people that are kind of mentally going through it.
Yeah, and then when do you know when it tips over to be a dangerous, violent individual?
Right.
It underscores, I think, the fact that as a society, we have not figured out yet
how to deal with mental illness.
Exactly.
This is the Big K Morning Show with a chance for you to win some tickets to a brand new show. It is a show that's coming to the Benedum. Come From Away is the name of the A show you can see on May 4th, the matinee at 1. We have a pair of tickets for you at 412-922-1020. Paul, pick a number.
Let's go with 8.
Caller number 8, 412-922-1020. And we'll give you those tickets, and we'll do this all week. Come From Away. Do you know what the show's about, Aaron? Come From Away?
No, not at all. I love the title, though.
It's epic.
It is.
Let me see. I saw on TV, but I wasn't exactly sure what it's about. So it's coming to the Benedum. It is a Broadway musical that tells the true story of 7,000 airline passengers stranded in Gander, Newfoundland, during the September 11th attacks.
It's a great story about how they were taken into the community.
Yes.
It's really a great story.
Actually, now that I hear that, I'm more interested, to be honest with you.
I mean, I don't know how many aircraft, but I know it was a lot.
Well, 7,000 airline passengers.
Wow.
In Gander, Newfoundland.
Well, I mean, if you go with an average of 300 a plane, if they're big planes, right?
Yeah.
That's, wow.
That's impressive.
20 planes or thereabout.
Man, it's... coming up this September, it'd be 24 years, obviously, and I'm sure that's hard to believe. So if you think back to, like, Pearl Harbor, right? December 7th, 1941. So add, you know, 25 years to that, right? Or 24 years. And then you can think back, like, most of the kids, obviously, they weren't born. They have no idea what that day was like, right? And as you put more distance on it, it's more difficult to make sure that they understand the significance of the day. All right, so what's going on with the tariffs? Every day it changes, and it has a different implication. Here's CBS's Derek Waller.
Today, parties are due back in federal court in the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the man the Trump administration admits was mistakenly deported to El Salvador. But at the White House Monday, the president of El Salvador said Garcia will remain in prison.
How can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it.
Top White House officials remain defiant despite a Supreme Court order for the administration to facilitate Garcia's release.
He was illegally in our country. He had been illegally in our country. If they wanted to return him, we would facilitate it, meaning provide a plane.
The White House says Garcia has affiliations with the MS-13 gang, which his family denies. In 2019, a judge ruled he could stay in the U.S. for fear going back to El Salvador could put his life in danger. Monday, President Trump also suggested he wants to deport some violent U.S. citizens.
If it's a homegrown criminal, I have no problem. Now, we're studying the laws right now.
As for his ongoing trade war, Trump says he's now weighing exemptions to his 25% auto tariffs.
I'm looking at something to help some of the car companies. They need a little bit of time.
The tariff whiplash coming after Trump allowed exemptions for some electronics before later backtracking, claiming those Chinese-made products were now just part of a different, quote, tariff bucket.
And meanwhile, multiple White House sources tell CBS News there have been heated disagreements between Trump's top advisors over plans for across-the-board tariffs, with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent reportedly warning of dire consequences for the economy.
CBS's Derek Waller.
Larry, on the markets yesterday, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ were all up about a half to 1%. And in this morning's futures trading, they're all up slightly to open the day.
Well, when the pause of all the tariffs except the deals with China went into place, that kind of gave everyone a chance to breathe and kind of sort through what it might mean in the future, but it didn't affect the now in terms of price increases. But with China, it's been this back and forth, and the amount of things manufactured in China that we buy is significant. And so trying to figure out, well, is that electronics? You heard Apple shipped those phones last week, 1.5 million through India to get them over before the tariffs, those kind of things. But each and every day, it's hard to follow what the true impact will be.
So in 2024, Larry, the top countries from which the United States imported goods were Mexico, China, and Canada. Mexico's piece of this was about $506 billion. Also in this list is Germany and Japan, both of them more than $140 billion. But you get some idea of where this fits in. Canada, 13%, Mexico, 16%, China, 14% of our imports. Those are the three major import relationships that we have.
And it may surprise people that Canada has that much of an impact. I mean, obviously, well, they are close.
Think about all the autos and trucks that are made up there.
And then the lumber and oil and other things. By the way, how about this? Flights from Canada to the U.S., down 70%. I think their feelings were hurt when it was suggested that they were a 51st state. And
I know if I were a Canadian, I wouldn't like to hear that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the governor of New York saying that we should be another county of the Empire State here in Pennsylvania? You know, how would you react?
70% right? Down tourism from Canada. By aircraft. It's the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. So we missed the rough stuff last night with the thunderstorms that tracked well south of the city of Pittsburgh. And then we are going to have some temperatures dropping. And as you heard Joe say, and we're going to go to the National Weather Service meteorologist Tim Cermak. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
We were fortunate to miss that thunderstorm activity. However, it is going to get much colder, and wind may be an issue. So you have posted a wind advisory in effect till 8 p.m. tonight. How windy is it going to get?
Yeah, so that wind advisory is for the higher terrain down in West Virginia, down in Tucker County. There we may see winds up to 55 miles per hour this afternoon and this evening. Around the Pittsburgh area, we're expecting wind gusts in the 35 to 45 mile per hour range. In those showers that we see this afternoon, those gusts could be a little bit higher, up to 50 miles per hour, and we could also see maybe some little hail in some of those.
Tim, I'm looking at the forecast is going to bottom out here in temperatures. We're going to be near freezing tonight.
Yeah, that's right. And then even colder, it looks like Wednesday night. We have a pretty powerful cold front that comes through, gives us some below seasonal temperatures down near freezing tonight and right down near freezing again tomorrow night. And the high temperatures tomorrow may not escape the 40s.
Lovely. But we're going to jump back up by the time we get to Good Friday. It'll feel summer-like.
Yeah, that's right. We have another system coming in. Looks like we have some high temperatures climbing back up into the 70s by Friday and Saturday, but that is going to come with an increasing chance for some rain and thunderstorms as well.
All right, Tim, appreciate the update. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Meteorologist Tim Cermak at the National Weather Service office here in Pittsburgh. A movie released over the weekend is called Warfare. It is supposed to be as accurate and real as it can be. It was written and produced in part by a Navy SEAL, Ray Mendoza, at the Battle of Ramadi in Iraq. And it's a battle that didn't get a lot of press coverage at the time. However, he wanted to make sure it was as accurate as possible.
Larry, I remember covering the Ramadi attacks and what was going on. It was awful.
And this is supposed to take you inside this Navy SEAL platoon. And joining us, Steve Monteleone from It's About the Warrior Foundation. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
One of the concerns is, Steve, this is so real that it will trigger a lot of combat veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan in particular. Are you seeing that already, even though it's only been out a few days?
Well, it's funny you say that because last night we had our Veterans Roundtable monthly meetings for mental health, and nobody actually brought it up, but we were talking about combat situations and, you know, some of the stories that the guys are talking about, everything and certain things they're doing is a trigger. So I would imagine this movie is going to be a big-time trigger for a lot of guys. A lot of my guys have gone through the carnage and fought in Ramadi and other places in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, Steve, I remember how shocking it was for me when I went to Saving Private Ryan, and the opening sequence of the landing at Normandy was something I was unprepared to see, that they said the realism was way off the charts. And so I've seen trailers for this movie we're talking about, and I would imagine that it's even worse than what I'm talking about.
Yes, absolutely. I saw the trailers too, and the first thing I just sat there and shook my head. I'm like, oh boy, this isn't good. I mean, it looked good to see, and it's a true story and all that, but I think eventually that could be a trigger. But at the same time, this might not sound like the right thing if you were actually thinking about it, but it might not be a bad healing episode for these guys, because they've been in that situation. And we, like I said, we were talking last night about a lot of their combat experiences, and a lot of them, you know, the first thing they said is they'd go back right now.
Really?
To help them. Yeah. It's just a veteran thing. A lot of guys, you know, especially in that group, we had 15 guys last night, and every one of them, you know, including myself, said we'd go back right now and fight. And that's how you just, you're trained. It's just a veteran thing. It's hard to explain, and people don't understand it. Like, you guys are crazy. It's just, but we're not. It's just a veteran, like-minded individuals that, you know, were trained to protect the country and fight for the country.
And this Navy SEAL, Ray Mendoza, wanted to be as accurate and not embellish in any way. And so they really apparently took great care to do that, to tell the story. But that said, a lot of people maybe, you know, we see a lot of action movies over the years, a lot of war pictures, and they're not accurate. He wanted this to take the rest of us for a brief period of time to get a sense of what your guys went through. Not that we could ever fully understand, but just to get a sense. But it is a trigger for some veterans, obviously.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a big trigger. You know, if you watch the movie Lone Survivor with Marcus Luttrell and his SEAL platoon group and what happened to them, and he's the only one that survived, you know, I saw a lot of people, a lot of guys watching that, and like I said, Private Ryan, and a lot of guys are shook up by it. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, because this is, you know, you haven't seen a whole lot of movies from in this situation in Ramadi and Iraq that were really, you know, hit home. But this is, from what I've been told, and I haven't seen, I'm going this weekend to see it, but from what I've told, it's really, really hits home.
Hey, Steve.
It'll be interesting.
For our audience that doesn't know much about Ramadi and what happened there, can you describe for our audience what was that all about?
Well, I wasn't there, but I can tell you from guys that were there, it was just, you know, the first wave, and it was, you know, the, you know, fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all the terrorist groups, the Taliban, all that stuff. Well, the Taliban's in Afghanistan, but just the battles, street-to-street combat, you know, and, you know, trying to clear houses. It was just a different environment. And I think, and again, I wasn't there personally, but from what my guys have been telling me, it was a whole different situation, because they weren't really prepared to clear buildings. And, you know, those people there fought hard, and it was just, you know, I could tell you a story of Jeremiah Workman. I don't know if you've ever met him before. He was a Marine.
Yes, sir.
And they were in a building, and, it was a bunch of insurgents. There was like 12 of them upstairs in this room, and they had to go up through these steps to clear the building, and they were throwing grenades at them, and they get blown out the door, and they'd regroup and go back up, and it just kept going on and on and on. You know, and all they see is these guys running, and they're trying to shoot them, and it was just a train wreck, and guys were, and he ended up losing two of his best friends from that little, just trying to clear the house.
When you have a phone call from one of your veterans, which is really how you started, it's about the Warrior Foundation, as you've explained right to me, what do you tell somebody listening who's struggling right now? What can they do to get help?
Well, you know, the first, and it's funny to say that, because I've had a guy is really struggling. I mean, suicidal, drinking, and he called me. He's been calling me a lot, and you know, I basically just try to calm him down, and try to get him some professional help, which we have, and he's gotten so much better. But I also told him that, hey, look, we have these veteran roundtables once a month. It's all veterans, and we just sit around in our office in Wexford, and we talk. You know, it's like AA for veterans, but obviously, it's no alcohol, but it's just, we're sitting in a circle, we're talking, and like last night, it was a lot of emotion, a lot of stories. And we've been doing this for months now, and it's really helped a lot of the guys that have come. I always tell people when they call me that, it's not okay to pull the trigger or do something that, you're going to end up hurting a lot more people than you think. But a lot of the guys, when you talk to them about that, they're like, well, I just thought it'd be better if I wasn't here because, it'd be better for my family. And you hear some of the responses and you should kind of shake your head like, wow. But the best thing you can do is, call the VA hotline, call us, call another person, and let that person vent to you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
And that's basically what I do. I just try to calm them down and just let them talk. And there's been times I've been on the phone 3-4 hours.
Well, I just wanted people to be aware that this movie, it might be something some people want to avoid. Because of the realistic way it was done by Navy SEAL Ray Mendoza. Steve Monteleone, yeah. I appreciate your time and what you do every day, brother. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon. And I know you're doing a lot of good things for our vets, and it's greatly appreciated.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think this weekend, if some guys haven't seen it, but the way veterans are, it wouldn't surprise me. They just go because they'd be interested in how it'd be, sure, how it goes. We'll see over time, but I'll let you know because our next roundtable session, I'm sure it'll come up.
All right, Steve. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Have a good day.
Goldberg, Persky, and White News Desk. That arson fire suspect in Harrisburg is a topic being discussed in places like the Oval Office.
The attacker was not a fan of Trump, I understand, just from what I read and from what I've been told. The attacker basically wasn't a fan of anybody. It's probably just a whack job. And certainly a thing like that cannot be allowed to happen.
Good morning, Larry Richard.
And so we'll continue to learn more, but no bail.
Income tax deadline day. In the next half hour, we're going to talk to a forensic danger. CPA.
That's something that just popped up this morning, Larry. A search underway for two men who parachuted from PPG Place over the weekend. They did the same thing at the U.S. Steel Tower last month.
Who are these guys?
Right. That's what police are looking for.
Every single day there's news about
Terrence. I don't know. Colin Dunlap says they sneak in at night and then do it in the overnight hours, and he posted a couple pictures of surveillance video of one of the jumpers, at least,
and CBS
on his ex account this morning.
With us.
A new necklace the Pirates were wearing last night has some people thinking the jewelry had something to do with the Bucks' best offensive output of the season. Andrew McCutchen talked about passing out these necklaces after their 10-3 win over Washington.
When it comes to baseball, you do whatever it takes to.
So the biggest development was over the weekend where we saw the administration quietly put out guidance that smartphones, laptops, semiconductor chips, a lot of electronics that we rely on China on, that they are exempt from that larger, what President Trump has called reciprocal tariff.
That's the 125% plus tariff. McCutcheon ordered black and gold necklaces for the team.
And what we've seen since from the White House is them trying to clarify, no, it's part of the exemption, no, yes, it is exempt.
I'm all in.
Keep going.
A lot of mixed messages coming from the White House. But yesterday, we saw President Trump say, it is, in a sense, admit that it is exempt, but also say that they are working on a separate tariff when it comes to semiconductor chips. Those are the chips that are in our smartphones, our laptops, a lot of electronics, as well as a tariff on pharmaceuticals that he said would be announced in the not-too-distant future. So you're starting to see President Trump do industry-specific tariffs, as he has this 90-day period to work with countries that are not China, pretty much, on their own trade deals.
Aaron, I'm curious to know, what were they referring to at the White House specifically when they talked about some of these electronics tariffs being temporary?
Well, you've seen, in part, that's why he's going to announce another tariff on these electronics. And that's why they say temporary in terms of being exempt from the reciprocal tariffs. But I think they're still looking to force a lot of manufacturers to come back into the U.S. And develop these technologies there. The White House in particular was pushing out that NVIDIA announced two AI plants that they're going to be bringing to the U.S. in Arizona and Texas in the coming years.
And I'm curious, we had heard Apple shipped 1.5 million iPhones last week through India to try to get ahead of the curve here. When will we notice here in the States, do you imagine, higher prices on products related to what's coming out of China?
Well, in part, we don't know yet, because the exemption on smartphones applied retroactively starting at April 5th. Of course, it seems that Apple didn't know that. And one interesting thing, too, is that President Trump yesterday in the Oval Office talked about his chat with Tim Cook, just the fact that they had been talking in recent days. And he talked a lot about, quote, flexibility when it comes to his tariff plan. So, again, it shows that the administration and President Trump are at least conversating with business leaders as they try and, you know, get some changes done to President Trump's initial tariff plan. But when it comes to the cost of smartphones, I mean, right now it's hard to say when that would increase, just given the exemption and the fact that we don't know too much about the specific semiconductor tariff that President Trump wants to institute in the next coming weeks.
Aaron, the White House, more than one person at the White House, I think including the president, has said as many as 75 countries have indicated their interest in having negotiations begin. But what do we know about that? Are any underway, or when would they be getting started? Do we know anything about that?
We know that at least 15 had put offers on the table, and the National Economic Council, Kevin Hassett, said yesterday that 10 seemed to be at a really good pace. And this morning, actually, there was an interview released of Vice President Vance, who said in an interview with a British outlet, that the United States and the United Kingdom are, quote, working very hard on a trade agreement currently, and said that there's a, quote, good chance it could happen. He contrasted that with Germany, who he criticized as being too heavily dependent on exports to the U.S. and not taking enough imports from American businesses. But it's a sign that at least with some countries, maybe our bigger allies, key trading partners, that those negotiations are moving ahead.
We appreciate the update, Aaron. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Aaron Navarro with CBS.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If I were in the National Press Corps right now, either in New York or Washington, Larry, I would have to keep very close track on paper of all these developments with tariffs and the negotiations with all of these different countries. It's that tangled.
It is. And for us to understand and untangle it, and just bottom line is, what's it going to mean to you and me and our audience, right? What's the economic impact? So yet to be determined. Although, again, the stock market was up yesterday at the end of the day.
And I think in our interview with Aaron, he also touched on something that has been a recurring theme now. The Trump administration is using the tariffs to leverage U.S. production of products that are made in other countries. They're looking to move it here, as he listed the example with NVIDIA.
Hey, just a side note, the national champion Ohio State Buckeyes visited the White House.
They were there yesterday.
Yeah, and the president, vice president was there. J.D. Vance, though, fumbled the trophy. And
it fell apart in his hands, apparently. They handed it to him, and it collapsed.
He actually handled it very well. he said, I didn't want anyone else to have it. It's a funny video. We'll post it because the trophy fell apart.
I wonder if I can find his comments about that at some point here.
Oh, yeah. It's actually... I didn't want anyone after Ohio State to get the trophy, so I decided to break it. That's what J.D. Vance said. Pretty funny.
See, now, you know, he went to OSU, by the way, and I guess that's one of the reasons why he was handling the... Right. But see if I can find that...
That former senator
here we go.
Ohio.
Here's the audio from the moment, apparently.
That's when the trophy came apart.
So apparently everybody got a laugh out of that. They put it back together, I guess, from what I could see.
Well, all in good spirits. It's kind of funny, though. You got to see the video to appreciate it.
So apparently when the top fell off the base, Vance just grabbed the top part and held that up.
Tuesday at this time, we check in with another medical professional brought to you by Independence Health System Expert Care here. And today, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Jennifer Erdos, an orthopedic surgeon specializing in sports medicine with Independence Health System Westmoreland area. Treats all age groups, athletes injured in the field, laborers, chronic pain, you name it, weekend warriors, even grandparents. Doc, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm guessing you're a busy physician with just the things that you have to do in sports medicine and orthopedic surgery. Just curious, what is the most common complaint that people come to you with?
Definitely pain, all pains. You know, I do a lot of shoulder, so especially shoulder pain and knee pain. That's the number one complaint, keeping them from doing what they enjoy doing.
And pain from... injury from actively doing something, or are we talking about the results of things like arthritis?
Both. You know, I see both. Definitely patients, you know, athletes get hurt with injury, but the most common is just the everyday person, just wear and tear. We have that thing called age that catches up with us and starts to really cause a lot of aches and pains, especially start to get into your 50s and 60s.
And I've heard if you have a rotator cuff injury, it's quite a process of recovery. It's not just a quick fix, is it?
It's not. I would say the hardest part about that surgery is the recovery. It takes probably almost an entire year to get back to where you really want it. You know, the rehab and the physical therapy is in the beginning, but it takes time for that body to recover and heal it.
And what about arthritis? How commonplace is it to have arthritis and get to a point where you actually have to have surgery?
Arthritis is very common. It's quite common in the shoulder. It's not as common in the shoulder as it is in the knees and the hips. Patients can go a decent while before they need like a replacement with shoulder arthritis. We try to manage it at first, but then potentially, you know, when it starts to limit their ability to sleep, especially, and then function during the day, they reach a point where they get ready for a surgical replacement.
We're with Dr. Jennifer Erdos. So this may sound like, and it is a remedial question, what is arthritis?
Arthritis is just the loss of joint cartilage that lines the ends of your bones at your joints. So it just deteriorates, it wears away, and then you no longer have that nice cartilage lining and it causes pain and discomfort. You can have arthritis without the symptoms, but when the symptoms start to kick up, that's when you see the patients in your office.
And that said, what is tendonitis?
Tendonitis is just inflammation of your tendons that different for each joint. In the shoulder, there's a significant amount of tendons, so you get inflammation around the tendon sheath that can cause pain and aggravation.
And then common sports injuries, you know, we're well aware that especially athletes then as they age have issues with their back, hips, knees. Knee replacement, though, there's been a lot of technological leaps, hasn't there?
There has been. I mean, the biggest probably advancement in replacements has been their longevity. You know, even 10 years ago, to get 10 years out of a knee, but now it's commonplace people will get, you know, over 20 years out of their primary knee.
And that said, I've seen, it just seems like a lot of people are getting knee replacements. And how long a process of recovery is that?
A knee replacement recovery, you know, the first 6 weeks is the hardest, but people are up and walking the day of the surgery. And then, you know, by 3 months, they're really functional without any assistance or any significant limp. And then, of course, they just keep getting stronger after that.
There's three things I think of when I, for football or a lot of sports, you hear an athlete has an ACL or MCL or Achilles issue. Can you kind of walk through those three things? What's an ACL?
Sure. The ACL is a ligament right in the middle of the knee that helps to stabilize the knee from buckling or giving out. Its primary role is when you're pivoting or cutting. So an injury to the ACL usually occurs when an athlete's planting or turning and it gives out, and it tears from its bony attachment. And then the athlete will usually have problems with stability of their knee.
And then an MCL.
An MCL is a ligament on the inside of your knee, like on the medial side, not in the middle of the knee, that's on the outside of the joint. And that usually very common in football players. If they get hit from the outside of their leg to the inside, it's a sprain or a tear of that ligament that's on the not inside your joint, but on the medial side of your knee.
And then I think most people are aware of the Achilles, and that's a really important, and when that breaks or tears, it causes a major, disability.
Yeah, the Achilles, it's actually much more common. It's very common in, like, 40-year-olds, but we do see it in the athletes because they just put so much power and energy into their step. And so when that ruptures, they have trouble pushing off, you know, going up on their toes.
Is there anything we can do to prevent some of these things in advance? I know there's going to be injuries, and there will be certainly in sports, but to kind of set your body up to be in the best place it can be.
Yes, I mean, they have, you know, we're seeing a significant rise in injury just because the athletes and especially the youth are doing so much more at a younger age, much more involved sports and more training. But they have done studies where there's stretching and there's certain prehab. Like, for instance, there's programs that you can do for ACL prevention. So the earlier we can start these athletes on that, the more we'll be able to prevent injury.
Dr. Jennifer Erdos, a orthopedic surgeon specializing in sports medicine, Independence Health System in Westmoreland. Doc, thank you for illuminating us.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. Brought to you by Independence Health System Expert Care here. April 15th, it is income tax deadline day. Probably don't need to tell you that. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen, and we have Paul. This is a great effort to get a forensic CPA. Dave Lewis joins us on one of the happiest days of the year for him because he knows after this he can breathe, right, Dave?
Yeah, I'm ready for a vacation.
I'm sure any CPA that I know over the years, you guys look forward to this day so that you can get a break, and you guys all put very long hours in. But I just shared a statistic with Paul, Dave. 1 in 4 Americans confess to procrastinate, and they wait to the last minute to file. So I'm sure you're hearing it and have for the past week, right?
Yeah, that is true. There's a large part of America who waits until the last few weeks to get their taxes done.
That said, what is one of the most common questions that you get as a CPA related to taxes?
Yeah, a lot of people who owe taxes or, you know, wait till the last minute. And the reason they wait for the last minute is various reasons. One is they may not have the money to pay it, or they just don't want to deal with it. And I always tell people the biggest piece of advice I can give them is don't ignore it. It just won't go away. So, you know, getting your taxes done on time is just as important, and dealing with the tax due can be done at any time.
I'm curious to know if you could give us a rough number. How many people do you hear from in the last week just at your practice?
Yeah, so that's a great question. There's probably close to 40% of our tax clients who wait until the last 3 weeks.
Yikes. Now, that said, before the, you know, electronic filing, and almost everybody files electronically now, or do they?
Yeah, they do. The post office doesn't stay open late anymore. So
remember those days?
Yeah. Most of America files online. They pay online. Everything you can do electronically now, it's faster, it's more accurate, and, you know, you could do it up until midnight if you wanted to.
And according to statistics, 45% of tax filers file their own, 55% get help through a tax preparer, someone like yourself, Dave. That said, if you feel like you can't get it done, there is a fairly easy remedy in filing an extension. However, that comes with a big caveat, right?
Yeah, so you can file an extension today. Just as long as you do it by midnight, they won't accept anything later. But that's just an extension to file your taxes or get the information to the IRS. Really, they want money that is due by midnight today. And they have a lot of different electronic filing options to file your extension through IRS.gov. You could do it for free, and they'll debit your account. You can pay by credit card, a lot of payment options that you can do through the IRS.gov and direct pay. But it gives you 6 months. 6 months, you have until November or October 15th, and you can then submit your information if you've already paid them, if you owe them anything.
I'm curious to know, what kind of an increase is there in applications for an extension on a day like today at the IRS? It's got to be a mountain.
Yeah. You know, we try to get most of our tax clients done if they give us the information. But, you know, filing electronically has been, or filing an extension has been fairly common because people aren't ready. A lot of people are small businesses, and they may not have the information that they need to file just yet.
So a great resource is literally IRS.gov. It'll give you all those options you talked about, Dave. And you can file an extension, but it's kind of the chicken or the egg. If you get close enough to know what you might owe, if you owe, then why can't you finish them? But you have, if you don't know for sure, you have to guess pretty close, because if you don't and you file that extension and send some money in and it's not nearly what you should owe, you will be fined, correct?
Yeah, you have penalties and interest that you have to deal with, and those continue to accrue daily. But if you look at your 2023 taxes, and you can give you a pretty good estimate based on what you might owe if you know, tax situations hasn't changed much for the year.
Dave, appreciate the advice. Thank you. And the big question is, what do you do to relax after this? You going somewhere fun?
No, not yet. But, you know, it's hard because you go, and then all of a sudden it drops. So it takes you a couple days just to kind of realize that you're not on the go all the time.
Unwind. Well, appreciate the time this morning. I know you're busy. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Larry.
Great job.
And decompressing, right? And, you know, Larry, it reminded me again what he was saying. I just want to repeat this. If you file an extension, you still have to pay your taxes.
Correct.
You don't get to wait to do that.
No, what he's saying is there are options to help you, which you can go to IRS.gov, like use of a credit card, but you still have to kind of figure out what you might owe,
right,
if you owe.
And the reason why that's so important is, in some cases, when someone owes taxes and they don't pay, then what happens is the interest and the penalties are so significant that they never really do get the taxes paid back.
Right. That's why, you know, they suggest you just get it done. Mm-hmm. However, if you don't owe taxes, then filing an extension is really very simple. And you can go to IRS.gov for a lot of that information. Or if you know a CPA, good luck trying to get a hold of him or her today. But great information from Dave Lewis.
The Goldberg, Persky, and White News Desk. The arson fire suspect in Harrisburg is a topic being discussed in places as far away as the Oval Office.
The attacker was not a fan of Trump, I understand, just from what I read and from what I've been told. The attacker basically wasn't a fan of anybody. It's probably just a whack job. And certainly a thing like that cannot be allowed to happen.
And it's brought up the issue of mental health and how can we, you know, take care of people in our society before it tips over to violence.
Right. His mother came out and told CBS News yesterday that her son was not on his medications and was mentally ill. Larry, there's a search underway for a couple of guys who parachuted from PPG Place over the weekend, and they did the same thing at U.S. Steel Tower last month.
Who are these guys, and why are they doing it? Thrill seekers, I guess.
Crazy. I know we have a couple of pictures posted on X by our Colin Dunlap, our afternoon host, if you want to check them out. A new necklace the Pirates were wearing last night has some people thinking, Larry, the jewelry had something to do with the Bucks' best offensive output of the season.
Okay.
Right? Andrew McCutchen talked about passing out these necklaces after a 10-3 win over Washington.
When it comes to baseball, you'll do whatever it takes to turn things around. So good old friends there at Fighting. We worked something out where they could send me some, and they did. And it's just kind of cool that, you know, we're able to do something as a team and then it translates into the game.
Maybe we could get a whole set for the Penguins, too.
I know these.
I like one. How much? Where? Who? What? Where?
They're made in Japan by a company called Fighten. It's spelled P-H-I-T-E-N. A rope-like baseball necklace. McCutchen ordered black and gold necklaces for the team, handed them out before the game. That's his way of being a leader.
Nice. Well, hopefully it works. We'll see. Tonight, it's baseball again at PNC Park. The Pirates and the Nationals will see if this is going to strike gold, black and gold. Good morning. It is 8:07. Income tax deadline day. Just if you're counting down, we heard almost one in four people wait to the last day. A third of America waits to the last week, so get her done. Meanwhile, I welcome Jim Rooney in studio. Yes, from that Rooney family. Jim and I have known each other a long time. He is the son of the late Ambassador Dan Rooney and Patricia. And over the years, we have crossed paths many times. Jim, good morning.
Larry, it's great to be here and good to see you. And I'm excited about our conversation this morning.
Yeah, we have talked in the past. You wrote a tremendous book about your dad, A Different Way to Win. And you had released an audiobook, which I really enjoy because it's so easy with the interviews you did with Roger Goodell, Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, Joe Green, Rocky Blyer, and so on. It's an easy listen, and I really enjoyed learning more about the process that your dad went through in those early days and the struggles. And people think everything's easy, right? And there were some great battles to get where we are today.
Absolutely. And you know, you think of the transition from my grandfather to my father and then my father to the world we live in today and you know, how they really built out the relationship between football and television and now, you know, football, sports, and all the media availability that there is. And you know, how do you be successful in that space, and how do you, you know, make sure that your fans are you know, feel that connection. And you know, I really feel that my father built the groundwork of the business model that allowed the NFL to be so successful, that allowed the Steelers to be so successful. And he did it by, you know, treating people fairly in negotiations. Didn't mean he didn't negotiate for his side, but he always tried to treat people fairly in those negotiations.
I think we've heard from enough players over the years that played under your father's leadership, how much they appreciated that. And, well, Friday night, Mel Blunt's annual roast of this year's Terry Bradshaw, but it was really not so much a roast as a recognition of the 50th anniversary year of the first Super Bowl, and to have those players come back, and a lot of them, you know, give homage to your dad in particular.
Well, thanks. You know, Mel is in the audio book, and Mel tells a great story. I don't think we put it in the book, but he and my father had this really tough negotiation. I think it was in 76. And, you know, it was a very difficult negotiation. Mel was really asking for more money than a cornerback had ever been paid before. And they get it done. He actually missed a couple games at the beginning of that season. But he said then he opened the first of the Mel Blount youth homes right in the middle of the negotiation. And my father flowed down to Georgia to be part of the thing in the middle of this sort of tough thing. And he said that really made him see this is the organization he wanted to be a part of. You know, he wanted to get the money that he thought he deserved, but he also felt like that was a sign that was above and beyond. He could, you know, he could have just sent a note or whatever, but they showed up. He said the place is in the middle of nowhere, so it's hard to get to, and that my father was always a big supporter of what Mel did, and that he was able to have those tough business negotiations, but still show, you know, that care for a player like Mel.
Yeah, the same happened with Franco at one point. People forget that, you know, on the steps protesting, and your dad reached out. So I highly
Joe Gordon, the great PR director,
who I saw Friday night with his wife Babe, which was it was a great night. And Terry Bradshaw's a funny guy. He in the moment he can create a lot of amusement, but it wasn't a roast. It was more of a tribute to that team.
They deserve it.
Absolutely. But you're one of nine children, including your brother, Art II, who's running the team right now. But what people may not know is you've been a type 1 diabetic since you're a young boy.
Yes, since 1977. Like all things, I market based on Steelers schedule. So my sister Duffy was diagnosed 8 years before I was with type 1. And then I was wetting the bed at age 10. And, you know, that's not a normal thing. And my mouth was dry all the time. And my mother kind of knew the symptoms. So she called a great doctor at Children's Hospital, Alan Drash, who really led the pediatric endocrinology program at Children's for years. And so I go in and go through all these processes that we can talk about. But the thing I remember most is the day I came out, we lost to the Denver Broncos in a playoff game. So that's how I mark my memories.
I actually remember that too. But that said, so two of the nine children.
Two of my mother's nine kids have type 1, and then my brother Dan has type 2 diabetes. So they're a little bit different.
And the difference, as I understand, is type 2 is developed over time and can be, in some cases, treated differently or is treated differently.
Right. So type 1 really comes from what, and I'm not a doctor, but my understanding is there's something that happens in your body that your T cells, your immune system, we all learned all about this during COVID, you know, the T cells and how important they are at attacking viruses, they start attacking what are called islet cells. And islet cells are hormone cells inside your pancreas that deal with the regulation of blood sugar. And the beta cells, or one of these islet cells, produce insulin. And they're then attacked by your own body. And then, you know, you need insulin to live. And so that's the basic biology. At the end of the day, type 2 is similar, that your insulin production is down, but it can be more because of weight or age or some other factors.
Right.
It's not necessarily that the T cells or that the immune system attacked your body in type 2.
And a significant number of people deal with this in this country.
Yes. So over 38 million people have diabetes in the United States. Every 27 seconds, someone is diagnosed with diabetes. The economic costs are estimated to be about $412.9 billion a year to deal with diabetes in this country. So it's a challenging issue to live with, and it's a major cost on the people who have it, as well as us as a society.
And we want to talk more about it. And the reason we're bringing this to light today is Jim is being honored on behalf of the Rooney family at the T1D, formerly the JDRF Promise Gala, which is coming up a week from Saturday, April 26th at the Westin. And I want to share how important this is and the technology breakthroughs that have come over the years and the promises of the future with Jim Rooney on the Big K Morning Show. It's 818 at News Radio KDKA from the Goldberg Persky and White News Desk, Paul Rasmussen.
Larry, we will have the latest on the Butler man accused of threatening to kill the president coming up at 8:30 on The Voice of Pittsburgh, News Radio KDKA.
Thanks, Paul. And we continue our conversation with Jim Rooney, and we're talking about your life dealing with diabetes. So many people share your story, and it's very personal in many ways, but at the same time, if it opened up an opportunity for people to reach out and learn more. This JDRF, by the way, which is now called T1D, is something I realized. A gentleman, the late Rob German, who was an attorney, asked me to MC a golf tournament. Gee, Jim, this is 30 years ago. And then eventually came to the gala and met so many great people. It's such a big night. And the outpouring is tremendous. Do you sense and feel the support? Because parents, anytime they're dealing with their children's health, they get very passionate. And this group is well-organized and very passionate.
Yeah, and I remember Rob and his wife and the commitment they had. Rob's no longer with us, but you know, I think it's so endemic of what I saw with my mother. And you know, I just think now as a parent and as an adult, you know, how difficult it is to see your child, you know, have to take shots, have to measure everything they eat, go through these low blood sugar challenges. You know, now we have all this great data, which is fantastic, and it's saving our lives and making our lives better. But there's a stress to it because you know immediately if your blood sugar went up or if it went down too quickly. And from a parent's standpoint, you know, constantly going through the ups and downs of a day with diabetes, you know, I just, you know, I've gotten more and more appreciation for the work that each parent has gone through, the stress, the, you know, the tears, and then the grit, the, you know, the passion they show. I mean, it is a lot of work. You know, you dose yourself after a meal, and for the next 3 hours, you know, your profile should be this. Sometimes it works perfectly, sometimes it doesn't work at all. And then 3 hours later, you may have eaten or you're taking another dose of insulin, and you're on sort of a whole new dynamic and what that experience is. It's challenging as an individual to have that, but, you know, for a parent or a caregiver, you know, just the constancy of it and having that, you know, knowing that that's going on at night while people are sleeping, you know, I just, there's a great deal of empathy that I've gained for all the caregivers and the parents and, you know, to really look at what that experience must be like, you know, it's a lot.
And I've seen, you know, the angst on the parents' faces too, because then as your children grow and now they want to go to college or leave you and start a life on your own. And as a parent, you're always a parent. You always are concerned. And many expressed, you know, having a hard time letting go and letting their children, you know, have their own life.
Yeah. No, and look, the fact of the matter is that some of the toughest times I experienced were, you know, going through puberty and going to college, because, you know, as a person with the condition, you know, I wanted to live as normal a life as possible.
Sure.
But it is an endocrine condition, so as your body's changing through puberty, you know, there's all different types of challenges because all your endocrine chemicals are changing during that time frame. And then in college, you know, you want to go out, you want to have fun, you want to do all the things you do in college. And, you know, it is an extra complication in any of those decisions. And I made plenty of bad ones in those years. And, you know, I remember, you know, a few times a couple friends of mine in a car and, you know, rushing to a hospital to try and, you know, get me some sugar. And, you know, half the time I'd be drinking juice on the way there. They were so scared. We ended up in some emergency room and my sugar would have been 400 when it was 37 when we started off on this trip, which are, you know, massive variants in terms of the impact on your body.
Well, walk us through, for those that don't know, what do you feel, what do you experience when you have low blood sugar? What happens to you and your conscious? Because you say you get to a point where you could be unconscious.
Yeah.
If it's not addressed at some point.
Yeah. You know, it's a little bit like being, drunk or buzzed without any fun, because it's, you feel the sense of anxiety. Your body is very hungry, and you can get to the, those points with low blood sugar that you're just shaking. Obviously there's conditions where you can pass out. And I've seen, I've seen folks, go into, seizures. So those are all the most extreme, but just generally, trying to function, working with you and knowing, okay, my blood sugar goes low in the middle of a conversation, is that going to impact what I say? Because you're out of it. And those moments between when the orange juice or whatever kicks in and, your body is just shaking on the inside, it's pretty scary.
What are some of the breakthroughs that have occurred that have helped manage this?
Yeah, it's, in my lifetime, so as I said, I was diagnosed in 77, and, I started with two shots a day, one long-acting insulin, another short-acting insulin, and that advanced to an insulin pump. So there's a machine now that you can put a tube full of insulin that will last, 3 or 4 days. You put a small needle in your body. The needle comes out, but there's still a piece of Teflon inside of you. And now I get the insulin constantly. So over a 24-hour period, I'll have a profile. And then when I eat, I will take more insulin. So that's been, I think, one of the most significant improvements. What we call a continuous glucose monitor, a CGM. Now on my phone, I have my blood sugar readings available to me 24/7. That allows me to make such better decisions. My A1C, so A1C is a test that shows how your control, as they like to say, with your diabetes has been for the last 3 months. My A1C has been below 6. The last one was 5.4, which is what a normal person's A1C is. And this is all because of this technology, particularly now knowing exactly when my blood sugar starts to go up, addressing it, whether it's doing some more exercise or adding insulin, deciding not to eat sometimes, doing things that allow me to get numbers that would have been unheard of 20, 30 years ago.
And this is every day, day and night.
Every day, day and night.
And I want to talk to you about this important night and how people can get involved and find out more for their own families. We're with Jim Rooney in studio on the Big K Morning Show. K Morning Show, and with me in studio, Jim Rooney, who is one of 9 children of Daniel and Patricia Rooney, and dealing with type 1 diabetes. As how old were you again, Jim?
10 years old.
10.
Fourth grade.
And obviously, over the years, and by the way, they are honoring Jim and the Rooney family coming up a week from Saturday, that's April 26th, at the Promise Gala. Breakthrough T1D is the official name. Many people remember it as JDRF, JD for juvenile diabetes. That's at the Westin. It's still not too late to get involved if you want to reach out to Breakthrough T1D. We talked about some of the new technologies, and you said, Larry, there are some things on the horizon, too, that give people a lot of hope.
Right, Larry. So here in Pittsburgh, which is fantastic, they've done some great discoveries with these islet cells that I talked about. These are the hormone cells that produce insulin. And they finally found ways to transplant them, because this is such a great transplant center. And they're working on different coatings that would allow them to not be attacked by the immune system. And that work, some of the core pieces of that work are being done at the University of Pittsburgh Medical School, as well as in conjunction with CMU. So it's some of the best technology. It is effectively a cure for diabetes that Pittsburgh is driving. And the one of the main doctors is a transplant surgeon named Martin Wickstrom, And, you know, Martin is already doing this in, you know, there's certain cases, you know, they do these studies as they go through this. And so we're already putting these islet cells into folks. Sometimes it's in the pancreas, and they've also find ways to put them in the liver where they're living in the liver. And these folks are now living without, the folks that are getting these transplants, without diabetes. So fantastic
and
progress.
Here in Pittsburgh.
Here in Pittsburgh is one of the leading centers, and the money that the dinners like the T1D Gala, you know, T1D, JDRF has been one of the core funders of this research. So it's been critical work. The efforts of people in Pittsburgh have brought this, you know, the resources in attending and supporting, I keep wanting to say JDRF, but T1D. And then it's great to see that, you know, the innovation of Pittsburgh is leading the way on this.
That is fantastic. For those that don't know, there's a global, this is not just Pittsburgh or even the U.S. There's a global impact. So if that could come out of Pittsburgh, wouldn't that be fantastic?
It really would, Larry. You know, I spent time working with kids with diabetes here in Pittsburgh, but I also spent time when I first got out of college, I worked in Chile with children from South America with diabetes. I spent two different winters, which were their summers, so it was pretty nice, down in Chile with camping programs for kids with diabetes. And it was really interesting to be in places where you don't have the same health infrastructure. And I saw folks, you know, diabetes doesn't discriminate. There is a higher likelihood in poorer populations, but it doesn't discriminate. So you had kids who had technologies just as good as mine. And then I remember this little girl, her name was Francesca, and she had she would get 10 shots a year, and she had to sharpen the shot on a piece of stone. And you know, you can think about how dull that would get, and to you know, make that you know, be able to sustain her diabetes you know, through those methods, and to think about what we in the United States have done with innovation and you know, all of this tremendous work to help people all over the globe.
Well, we certainly, that comes to fruition here in Pittsburgh, but exciting, and it does give people a lot of hope. I got to ask you before we run out of time, though, what's it like growing up a Rooney? I mean, you know the passion that people have now around the world. The team's going to Ireland to play a real regular season game next fall. We'll get the schedule here, I guess, in a couple of weeks to make it official. But just, I can't imagine what it's like. Your grandfather is the chief, your dad the ambassador, your mom very prominent too, and your brother Art is running the team. What's it like?
Well, you know, and I can throw some diabetes stories in here because, you know, I worked at training camp. I started camp when I was in seventh grade, so I would have had diabetes for about 3 years at that point. And I remember our trainer, Ralph Berlin. Ralph was, you know, all the guys from the 70s that we talked about, spent a lot of time with Ralph. He was a cranky old guy with a cigar and you know, always had a joke. But I would keep my insulin in there, and I would prepare my shots. And while the guys were icing their knees or whatever, I'd be taking a shot. And three guys in particular always kind of looked out for me because they would see me in there. You know, one was Mark Malone. Mark Malone, you know, the great quarterback that we had after Terry Bradshaw. You know, he just really always was kind of checking on what I was eating, how I was doing. Dwayne Woodruff, the judge, you know, always looked out for me, and he would talk about, you know, knowing family members who had diabetes with him. And then the other guy who was cranky and difficult and everything else, but still in his special way, Lambert. Lambert,
I knew always, you were going to say that.
Lambert was always looking after me with the diabetes, even though anything he said to me, I couldn't say on air. But there, you felt that care. You felt that he was interested in, you know, was I okay on the field? Was I eating the right things and thing? And you know, if he saw me eating something I shouldn't be, he wasn't, you know, kind. You know, he would call me names that when you're in seventh grade, you barely even knew what those names were.
That's Lambert. For those that don't know, he, in underneath that really rough exterior, he's got a good heart. He really does.
One of the best people you ever met.
And I want to give a shout out to Dr. Stanley Marks too, because he, because of his son,
yep, Jordan,
he got involved and really helped start this chapter with a two other couples, I believe, just around a kitchen table talking. What can we do? And look what's happened since. And on the verge of maybe the biggest breakthrough ever from right here in Pittsburgh is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and Stanley Marks is you know, he's one of the best oncologists in the world, brilliant doctor, has done so much for cancer patients here in Pittsburgh. But the care he's shown to diabetes and the diabetes community has been fantastic and, you know, something I think we're all grateful for.
Next Saturday, that's April 26th, Breakthrough T1D, formerly JDRF, the Promise Gala at the West End. You can still get involved. The honoree this year, Jim Rooney. On behalf of the Rooney family, Jim, I appreciate you coming in. Highly recommend that you also get your audiobook, A Different Way to Win, story about your dad and the great struggles and the great triumphs of our Steelers. Notice how we say our Steelers here.
Well, they are our Steelers, so I hope it stays that way.
All right, I appreciate you coming in. Outstanding, and congratulations. This is a great honor.
Well, this is an important organization. The work they do, you know, really changes so many lives. So thanks for having me, Larry.
All right, now who's going to be the quarterback?
I don't make those decisions.
Good answer.
Goldberg, Persky, and White News Desk. Harrisburg's arson fire suspect is a topic of discussion as far away as the Oval Office.
The attacker was not a fan of Trump, I understand, just from what I read and from what I've been told. The attacker basically wasn't a fan of anybody. It's probably just a whack job. And certainly a thing like that cannot be allowed to happen.
And this has sparked the conversation about mental health and what we can do before someone turns violent.
Yes, a search underway now for two men who parachuted from PPG Place over the weekend, and they did the same thing, Larry, at the U.S. Steel Tower last month.
What are these guys doing jumping off buildings in Pittsburgh with a parachute?
I guess it's a thrill-seeking type thing.
I actually want to meet them. I want to have them on the air.
If we could get them, that would be great. By the way, Colin Dunlap told us about this. He made a post on it on X. Couple of pictures to look at if you want to check it out. Now, a new necklace the Pirates were wearing last night has some people thinking that they had something to do with the Bucks winning 10-3 over Washington. It was Andrew McCutchen who talked about passing those necklaces out after the game.
When it comes to baseball, you'll do whatever it takes to turn things around. So, good old friends there at Fighting. We worked something out where they could send me some, and they did. And it's just kind of cool that, you know, we're able to do something as a team, and then it translated into the game.
You realize, Paul, a black and gold necklace with the Steelers, Penguins, Pirates. If Andrew McCutchen, if people think this is going to work, they're going to sell a million of these things.
Yeah, the Japanese company that makes them is called Phiten, Phiten. McCutchen ordered these for the team, and then, as we said, he handed them out before the game, and everything changed.
I want one.
Me too.
We'll get a price on them. We'll see how much they are. They're probably like $2 million or something. But we'll let you know on the Big K Morning Show. Americans spend $66 billion on weight loss products and services each year. And you know what? Right here in our hometown, Pittsburgh's very own board-certified and licensed hypnotherapist Dan Bischoff has helped thousands of people do just that, lose weight, keep it off. In fact, he's been helping people take back control of their lives for more than 20 years here in Pittsburgh at the PA Hypnosis Center. You have an opportunity to do the same. Are you battling anxiety? So many people are. He can help you with that. If you want to quit smoking, Dan Bischoff is the call you should make at the PA Hypnosis Center today. Schedule your free consultation at 724-934-8446. 724-934-8446. Dan can help you reach your goal with a 98% success guarantee. 724-934-8446. Call now. Big K Morning Show. Next hour, we're going to talk to Lynn Hayes Freeland, and also so much to cover. How about the fallout after the all-female crew blasted almost 24 hours ago, the Blue Origin? I can't believe how fast they get up to space and then come back.
Like 11 minutes for the whole trip. What about the fallout? What has there been?
No, I just mean their reaction, because if you recall, the one that really struck me is when William Shatner went up, and he was brought to tears. And he said, even, you know, he's older, looked at life in that moment completely. It gave him some kind of different perspective that he didn't anticipate. And yesterday, pop singer Katy Perry, you got Jeff Bezos' fiance,
Lauren Sanchez.
Lauren Sanchez. And then Gail King from CBS.
And they're still making news on this morning on CBS Mornings. There's a lot of video of Gail in space.
Yeah, she said this.
It's oddly quiet when you get up there. It's really quiet and peaceful. And you look down at the planet and you think, that's where we came from? To me, it's such a reminder about how we need to do better, be better. Do better, be better human beings.
If that's the takeaway, that's not a bad place. Don't we all want to be better?
I'd like to go and check that out. That would be fine with me. 11 minutes would be more than enough.
You know, I had, and as I'm sure they did, some anxiety about watching this thing yesterday.
Well, you saw the look on Gail's face when she was walking on the gangplank to go to the capsule.
The gangplank.
Whatever, the gangway, whatever.
No,
whatever,
you're,
the gantry.
You're what, right.
Yeah, I mean, she had a look on her face like, ooh, God.
Income tax deadline day. You know that, right? It's easy to file an extension if you have to. And you can go to irs.gov. A lot of people stressed out today because of that. No worries. Take it easy. Take a deep breath. Here we are in spring, and I have a question. Have you ever seen the box tree moth? That is among many pests. And from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, we have a special guest, an agriculturalist. Catherine Bronski joins us. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, and thanks so much for having me on your show today to talk about Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month, why it matters in Pennsylvania, and more widely across the country.
Yeah, here in Pennsylvania, so we know we've had these spotted lantern flies for the last few years, for a while, the stink bugs, and there have been others. What are some of those others that we expect that are hitchhiking rides to come to southwestern Pennsylvania?
Yeah, hungry pests are invasive insects and plant diseases that damage crops and agriculture and our forest trees, even your own backyard. And it's really easy for people to accidentally move them to new areas. So that's why we're on the lookout for it. And in Pennsylvania, you mentioned a few of the top ones: box tree moth, spongy moth, spotted lanternfly is there. We're also on the lookout for some pests that are not in Pennsylvania yet, like Asian longhorn beetle, some fruit flies, and some milk death. These are things that we hope will never get there, and people can really help to prevent the spread.
Now, we talked about some of these invasive pests, these bugs, but I don't think a lot of people think of invasive plants, of which there apparently are many in the country.
Yes, there's invasive plants as well, but the concern with these hungry pests are the insects or diseases travel with the plants that you're bringing in. And so we want to make sure people can do a lot to protect our plant health and agriculture nationwide by taking a few small steps. You'll be on the lookout for these hungry pests, detect them early, reduce their spread, and even report them so that we can know ahead of time to be on the lookout for them. And we have a great resource, a website that I would recommend everybody take a look at so you can see pictures of what these hungry pests look like. Go to hungrypests.com, and there's not only information there of what the pests look like, what the risks are for your state, but also contact information. So if you happen to see something that looks suspicious in your own yard, garden, and your community, you can report it to your local state agricultural official.
Yeah, I can see, since I've logged on, this is pretty expansive. I mean, it is really well done, and it's hungrypests.com, and it's estimated that, what, $40 billion in damages due to these invasive plant pests and diseases. So I know that when people are asked, hey, be conscientious of not bringing these invasive insects and plants into the region, what else and what advice do you give us as we get into the spring here? Things are starting to really pop.
Right. There really is, a lot at stake here. And every year, like you mentioned, it costs over $40 billion in damages to trees, plants, and crops. And we're protecting our farmers, jobs in agriculture, and the health and sustainability of our own livelihoods. And so be on the lookout for those in your vehicle. You can check even your wheel well of your vehicle can have egg masses from spotted lanternfly or spongy moth. Check your outdoor equipment. This is backyard items that may have been out there over the winter, and your barbecue and other things, and patio furniture before you're moving to new areas. Also be on the lookout for your outdoor gear as you're traveling to new places. You can scrape off and smash those egg masses before traveling and therefore preventing a new infestation in a whole new area. And then clean your gear before returning back home as well. And that way you're not transporting a new population of hungry pests to a new area.
Agriculturalist Catherine Bronski from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. And Aaron, you now live in the forest. You just got a home with your husband. Have you seen any of these pests, spotted lanternflies?
Larry, I was getting chills as she was talking about eggs and your wheels and searching your furniture. But I do have to say, I went downstairs to check the laundry. Uh-oh. And when she said, I can't remember, the Asian something beetle, okay? I had to look up what it looked like because I saw a long beetle. It wasn't that kind of beetle, but I saw a weird looking beetle down there. And guess what I used to kill it, Larry?
Harmony.
I sure did.
Organic insect control.
Yep.
You know, this is a very unique because it's organic, but, you know, we talked to Andy Emrine from EB True Value about it. And I mean, it's something that really you should look into.
It's amazing.
Yeah. You have pets, you have kids, you have, you know, friends, you have people. And have you seen any stink bugs yet?
Yes. I've seen stink bugs more than any other bug at this point.
Spotted lanternflies?
No.
No, they're coming.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah,
they're coming.
No.
Along with this, what is that, the box moth?
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen that.
Go to hungrypests.com and take a look, and then call Aaron and terrify her. Hey, we're going to check in with Lynn Hayes. Check out The Drive at 5. These are the top stories driving the news every weekday afternoon with Colin Dunlap, brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh Demand, the Yellow Van. And every Tuesday, we check in with our colleague Lynn Hayes Freeland live from Atlanta, Georgia. And you can see Lynn on the radio with our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Lynn, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. I have a totally unrelated question to anything, but I'm looking at you and I'm looking at me. And, you know, once I stopped doing TV on a regular basis, I stopped getting that no-glare lens in my glasses.
Yes.
Do you have that in your glasses?
I do. It's called
That's why I have a glare and you don't.
Non-reflective lens.
Okay.
And I got it way back when. Remember iTeek?
Yes.
Norman
Childs.
Sue McInerney, yeah. Our old news director at KDK TV, took me over. She took me to Arnold Zigarelli's and said, fix him. And then she took me to see Norman Childs to get the non-reflective lenses. It's funny you would bring that up.
Yeah, well, I definitely have to. You know, I was thinking, well, I'm not on TV anymore. I don't have to worry about that. But then Zoom took on, and these kind of calls took on a life of their own. So I think I have to revisit it. You know, it's funny. You mentioned Sue McInerney took you there and took you to see Arnold Zigarelli. And I don't know what it's like now at television stations, but I do know back then there was like a team of folks that would get together and they would say things like, don't wear that blouse. That color doesn't look good on you. That lipstick has too much blue in it. You got to go this way. I mean, there were people that really, for those of us like you and I, who didn't have like this extensive background necessarily in TV, that just kind of walked us through and made us look halfway decent sometime on the air.
Yeah. And Lori wants full-time makeup. We used to have makeup people. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Lori Geiger.
Yeah, and that kind of made us unique, I think, when we had a full-time makeup person. And Lori was just the best. I mean, she would do things and she knew things that I knew nothing about.
Well, now that's all out the window. Meanwhile,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you, when I saw an all-female crew go up 24 hours ago, almost to the minute, Gayle King from CBS, morning anchor.
Yep.
Pop star. You had Katy Perry. You had the fiance of Jeff Bezos, who created Amazon, and he's behind Blue Origin, mm-hmm. Lauren Sanchez, and a couple of other women, who some who had experience. But Gayle said this when she returned to Earth.
It's oddly quiet when you get up there. It's really quiet and peaceful. And you look down at the planet and you think, that's where we came from? To me, it's such a reminder about how we need to do better, be better. Do better, be better human beings.
Not a bad way to be. Do better, be better. Would you have done
it? Yeah, I'm not sure that I make the correlation, however, with it being oddly quiet and do better, be better.
My take on that was, she's suggesting that when you get there, there's nothing else. It's just quiet space. And it gives you a moment to reflect. And they were only weightless for 4 minutes, and then they came right back. To me, it's mind-boggling that you could shoot something up 50 miles in the air and have it come back and still have 4 minutes to be weightless and do it inside of 11 minutes.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of baffling to me. I'll be honest, full disclosure. Maybe I didn't pay that much attention early on. So when I saw that they were coming back, I was like, wait a minute, didn't they just go? So that was a really short period of time. I kind of, off the top of my head, I'm not sure that I want to be among the first. And at this point, I'm not and don't have an opportunity to be. But I want to wait a little bit before I do it. But ultimately, would I like to go into space? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, they keep making, you know, strides and hints that we're going to be colonizing somewhere. I don't know. We haven't been back to the moon in a while, so let's start there before we, you know, traipse off to Mars. The only Mars I want to go to is in Butler County.
No one nearby. Yeah, exactly. But I think it is interesting that now we live in an era where average civilians get this opportunity, whereas 10 years ago, I don't think that happened. And so I think that's an awesome development in our society and certainly technology, that people like Gayle King and some of the other ladies who went, and ladies, a full crew of women. I mean, that in itself was historic.
So what in the news cycle has your attention?
I'll be honest, this the mayoral race in Pittsburgh has really captured my attention, my imagination. I think I mentioned to you, I was in Pittsburgh last week, and I was surprised to see, well, first of all, there's a lot of money going into that race, which is unusual for a mayoral race in Pittsburgh. There's clearly a lot of television advertising money being spent, which is also unusual for a mayoral race in Pittsburgh. Excuse me. And of course, we know that in all probability, whoever wins the Democratic primary will be the mayor, will win the general election in November. But I'm surprised at how much interest there is in this race. And I'm hoping that it just translates into voter turnout.
And we've had Mayor Ed Gainey in studio, and we've invited Corey O'Connor to come in that same time frame. So he'll be in studio next Tuesday in our 8 o'clock hour. And then we are hosting a debate that'll be live on the air. I'll be participating along with Lenny McAllister, and we'll have some pre and post game and a chance to have a conversation. I think that will be a very important hour.
I think so too. So now is that on the 8th? Is that May the 8th? Is that the date?
That's correct.
May the 8th. Okay. I have to make sure that I tune in for that. The good news is, I think that, you know, they're doing a lot out in public. They're going places, people are getting to ask them questions. And I think a lot of times it comes down to who's in the public, who knows what's on the public's mind. And the only way you're going to find that out is to get out there, go door to door or whatever, or opportunities like this one coming up on KDKA radio. So voters can't say that they don't have the information. Voters can't say, well, I didn't know, which is what I think there's a lot going on right now about the last November election. People are saying, well, I didn't realize, I didn't understand. There's no excuse for that. You just got to pay attention. And certainly the Pittsburgh media is doing a great job of covering this race so that voters have no excuse not to get out and vote.
Lynn Hayes Freeland, we'll have more. And I want to ask you, don't answer now, if you're one of those last second tax filers or not, is Lynn a procrastinator when it comes to tax returns?
Yeah, I knew that was going to come up.
All right. Coming up, and who's enjoying time with his family this week, we have our own Michael Bartley in the air, chair 10 until 2. And we continue our conversation with Lynn Hayes Freeland every Tuesday in our 9 o'clock hour. So, Lynn, what topics have touched you in the past week?
Well, you asked me a question.
Oh, yeah, before.
You asked me a question before the news.
Yeah. Are you a last-minute tax filer?
All right. So, I feel like I have to put this in context. So, when I was growing up, my mother was an accountant. So, she did taxes from her home office during tax season.
Wow.
And so, for the longest time, I can remember my dad. We lived in Oakland. My dad would leave the house about 11:25 on April 15th, go down to the main post office and sit in that line until he could get up to hand. They would have people on the streets collecting your taxes.
They even passed out pizza sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. When I was old enough to drive, that became my job to go down on April 15th. So that's the context. That's what I grew up in. Waiting until the last minute or getting them done at the last minute. Technically, my taxes are done. I just haven't sent them in yet.
Well,
and all you have to do is hit that button.
Don't feel bad. You're in good company. 33% of Americans wait to the last minute, and 1 in 4 wait to the last day.
Yeah.
That's today.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I think there's something, even when I know people, you know, if you have to pay, I totally understand waiting until the last minute. If you're getting money back, that part I never quite understood, but I did that too. You know, I would look and say, oh, that's a nice little haul, but I would still do it at the last minute. It's just a frame of mind because I was going to say, typically I'm not a procrastinator, but I think if I'm honest, I probably am much more of a procrastinator than I want to admit.
Well, what's interesting is in our business, as you know, you don't have the luxury of, you know, stretching deadlines. It's either, you know, you're on the air, you're on television, you're on radio, you can't fudge that. So you on one hand are very organized and detailed and on time, and then other parts of your life, we don't have to do that right away, do we?
Well, they call that like the yin and the yang, because I think if you spend so much time, got to be here at this time, got to be there 5 minutes early, got to do the mic check, got to do this, got to do that. So then when you have some other things where you don't have somebody in your ear saying, get on camera, get in front of the mic, you take a little more time. So I will do it today, and I probably won't wait until the absolute last minute, but it'll probably be late this afternoon. And I don't know that that's ever going to change, Larry. That's just who I am. How about you? Have you done yours?
Yes.
Not one of those.
I'll be dropping them off when I leave here.
Okay. I was going to say, because I have a lot of friends who are those, as soon as the W-2s come out, they're getting them. They're calling saying, where's my W-2? I was never that person.
Yeah. And it depends on how complicated, you know, there are a lot of factors. It's not just how much did you make, send it in. You know,
right. It's
a little more involved than that. All right. What new? I mean, there's so many different things in the news cycle. What's on the top of your mind right now?
You know what? This whole national politics is really kind of bugging me. This story with Harvard, I think I am concerned when our government is getting so involved with our institutions of higher learning that they want to dictate what's happening in some of those campuses. And for me, that's not really a political decision. I just think that part of the beauty of higher education is it gives you, the student, a chance to explore, to learn, to start developing your ideas and your thoughts. And if the government has so much say about what's happening on our campuses across the country, that's alarming to me. And if they're attaching then the dollars that these universities get That's even more alarming. So that story has really captured me. I want to watch and see what happens. Personally, I applaud Harvard for taking a position. I think that certainly, you know, HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities, have taken big hits with so much pressure on DEI and diversity and making it go away. They're taking a big hit too. So I would love to see all of the, you know, not all obviously, but a lot of these college presidents come to the table, sit down with the White House and see if there's some common ground there.
I don't think we wanted more government sitting on our shoulders, overlooking everything we do, right? We expected the opposite.
Yeah, and I think that's it. You know, I mean, when you listen to the pundits, they say, well, this is what the people voted for. Well, I'm not sure that this is exactly what the people voted for. In theory, some of this may be what the people voted for. And I also, you know, the tariff conversation is one conversation, but you just don't hear much about the price of eggs anymore or the price of gas anymore. And at the time of the election, that's what they were leading us to believe, that that's what was going to make the difference at the polls. So I know that egg prices have dropped a little bit, I'm guessing in anticipation of Easter. But what happens next month when the price of eggs goes back up, when the price of gas goes back up?
Well, I think once the tariff thing is figured out and there's certainty, you know, the markets like a little more certainty. They don't like uncertainty. And we've seen the reactions throughout the course of the last couple of weeks. Hey, that said, by the way, Joe Biden is set to deliver his first public address since leaving the White House today at the National Conference of the Advocates, Counselors, and Representatives for the Disabled. So I'm sure we'll get some feedback from that. And it's Jackie Robinson Day. On this day in 1947, Robinson debuted for the Dodgers, breaking the modern-day MLB color barrier. And all the teams, including the Pirates, all the players, will wear number 42.
Well, we're number 42, and it's awesome that they're doing it again, especially in a time where a lot of these recognitions are being erased. On the Joe Biden thing, I am curious to see or hear him today, because if you've seen some of the video of him, he looks 10 years younger. He's got a little bounce in his step, and he's got, you know, some sun color in his face, big smile. So who is this guy?
We'll see. Lynn Hayes Breland, we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
See you, Larry.
Have a great Easter.
Thanks, you too.
Coming up, we'll check in with Michael Bartley, who's in for Marty Griffin next.